Hello, Cleveland, and welcome back to another edition of the Dogland Podcast. I'm your host, Jackson McCurry. We intended to do an episode Thursday night after round one, but myself and Anthony were so tired that it was not even possible. And lo and behold, Friday morning, I am up and managed to dial up my buddy from across the pond, Jack Duffin of the OBR, to join me. Jack, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. Living on a lack of sleep, but we do it again. Back into the battle.
Yeah. It was easier when we were younger. As we get older, it's kind of tough, man. We just drag the whole day after a rough night of little to no sleep. But yeah, I mean, that's what we do when we're covering the Browns, covering the NFL. But yeah, it's a grind. But last night, real quick, Jack, did you expect six quarterbacks in the top 12? And I forget how many offensive players in the row. Like, the draft was so wild, it blew any expectations of chaos that I was coming into it with.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't surprised that we had the quarterbacks. I was surprised it was in the first 12. I thought we'd see a couple of them at the end of the first round, teams trading up maybe. The focus on offense, I don't think it's a shock because I haven't heard anyone really rave about this defensive class. And usually you've got, hey, it's not a Myles Garrett or someone like that in there where people are like, hey, this guy's phenomenal. And it's where the league's moving. They keep saying these nerds have no impact on the league, but we're seeing more quarterbacks, we're seeing more offensive talent. The league is moving that way, whether the old school lot like it or not, the nerds are taking over.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I expected at least five quarterbacks. Bo Nix, I was on the fence with. But, like, once the smoke had cleared, I was like, okay, Denver, if they're not trading back, they're probably going to take him. I didn't buy any of the Penix rumors to Atlanta. And when that happened, I was just like, man, they, like, because Rap Sheet had said right before, he goes, well, Arthur Blank wants them to have a succession plan at quarterback. Because Kirk Cousins only has 2 years guaranteed on his deal. And I'm like, Kirk's still pretty decent. Like, he could probably make it the length of the contract. But, man, they did take the swing on Penix. We were talking in the group chat this morning. It was kind of like, gives the Jordan Love vibes. Even though, like, the Packers thought Rodgers was going to decline. And I think he won MVP in 21. But, like, I just don't see Kirk dropping off that terribly in the next couple years. But, and I'm not the biggest Penix fan, but I mean, yeah, that was the most interesting pick of it all, was him going eight, because it was defense, defense, defense mocked to them. And then all of a sudden, boom, they take the quarterback.
Yeah, it's one that I don't get it. If they take him, I don't know where they pick in the second round, but if they took a quarterback in the second, I think Kirk's like, cool, I get it. I understand why you've done that. And I think he gets it. And I think you made a really good point of he should reach out to Jordan Love and just have that conversation, because he's the most recent person that's gone through something like this. And lots of people are like, I feel bad for Kirk. And I'm like, I feel probably worse for Penix, because Penix is going into an absolute dumpster fire of a situation. Hey, the team's got some nice pieces. It's not about the talent. Drake May is going into the dumpster fire of talent, but this is the dumpster fire of situation. You don't really want to be somewhere where you don't know how Kirk Cousins is going to take being there. That dynamic where constantly there's just going to be QB controversy for like 2 years. It's an awkward position for everyone. And yeah, I think if they take an offensive player, or even if they take a defensive player, and then they take the QB in the second, I think Kirk Cousins is camp like, hey, fine, whatever. Eighth pick. You sign Kirk Cousins because you want to win now. And they've said, no, we're focused on the future. Why?
Yeah, such a train wreck in Atlanta. Terry Fontenot's got to be the hottest GM on this. Like, this, the GM with the hottest seat going into 2024 just because of that decision. Oh.
Unless they trade for one of these 49ers. That's the one out that they could have.
Yeah, and that's still a hot rumor. Obviously, Buffalo starts the draft Friday night with pick 33, and the rumors are there, even though I don't see how they can make that kind of move with the cap situation, because if you're doing that, then why did you ultimately trade Stephon Diggs? I know there was a rift potentially there inside the locker room, but why would you trade a high expensive wide receiver for another one potentially, or pay? I mean, paying Ayuk is a different story, because then you can work through stuff and figure out the cap situation. But like trading for Debo, like that doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, I could see Atlanta doing that ultimately as well.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be an interesting move for them. And I think that then gets Kirk Cousins back on side. But yeah, it's just people management. When you just need to look after guys. I remember when Dorsey got rid of Zeitler and his wife found out on the phone while they're in the cinema. And it's like, why are we doing this, guys? It's like all we hear is how relationships are really important, and it's like you're just trashing guys. Because if you're a free agent now having a conversation with Atlanta, you're not trusting a word they tell you, and that's a dangerous, dangerous position. And it's why you'd rather go the extra mile for guys and just keep them really on side. Because the Browns, not only because they spend a load of money, they have a good relationship with lots of agents. And they're always chatting to agents, always chatting to teams. There's just that really, really good connection with everyone, and they're seen as being honest. And it was like Andrew Berry's first year, and he was ranked top five by agents for like, hey, we love working with this guy. Whereas, yeah, you've got teams like the Bengals, they don't want to pay anyone, so that's causing issues. You've got obviously what's going on with Atlanta, but all of that just reflects really, really badly, and it hurts you down the line. It's not we've paid this guy, sod them. It doesn't matter about the relationship with Kirk and Kirk's agent as much. It's what the rest of the league sees. And even if you're in that building, you're like, I thought we were here to win. Oh, they lied to us.
Yeah, they ultimately did. You got to take care of your players because it'll benefit the organization in the long run. You mentioned the Bengals real quick. Let's talk about the AFC North picks. The Bengals went offensive tackle at 18. They took Amarius Mims. Pittsburgh took one of my favorite offensive tackle prospects, Troy Fontenot out of Washington at pick 20. And Baltimore took Nate Wiggins, the corner, out of Clemson. I think as far as addressing the talent, I think all three did what they needed to do to solidify those position groups. The one pick that I will question is Amarius Mims, because when I looked at the offensive tackle prospects, he was the one that, you know, I wasn't completely sold on, because in the 3 years he's been in Georgia, he's only made eight career starts and I think less than 900 snaps. Like, I get the talents there and the upsides there, and you have Trent Brown and Orlando Brown to help ease him along as he continues to develop. But that wouldn't have been the offensive tackle that I would have went with Cincinnati. But, you know, I'm just a podcaster and a blogger, so my opinion obviously means not as much as theirs in the front office. But I thought they all did good in terms of filling positions of need. But Mims is the one I'm definitely questioning there.
Yeah, I'd put about as much work into the first round prospects as we do into like looking after our hair. It's there was very, very little work I did, because I was like, I just don't care. I'm much more fascinated with what's going on in the second and third round. And like first round guys, I'm like, I don't really know some of these, because why should I focus on it? It makes no impact really to the Browns, but it's one where I'd much rather they were taking linebackers and safeties and guards and centers than, hey, we've got tackles and corners, top five premium positions. So like when they Steelers traded up for Devin Bush, I was ecstatic. People were like, oh, have you watched him play? I'm like, no, I don't care. He's a linebacker. And it's simple as that. It's like, give me poor position value to the rivals. And yeah, they all look like smart picks. And it's interesting, they've got three absolute giants, the Bengals. So that's going to be fascinating to see. But it's worth having three. And even it'll come with DeJuan Jones for the Browns connection there. These big, big, big guys more susceptible to injuries.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Mims has obviously dealt with his injuries in Georgia. That's going to be an interesting pick. They're trying to load up to try to stop Myles Garrett. I don't see it happening. So as we come into today, Jack, looking at the board, I think we're in a good spot at 54. There's still plenty of talent there, especially with positions that the Browns need to attack. I mean, we've talked offensive tackle. Kingsley's there. Amagaji's there. Rosengarten, Blake Frazier. Patrick Paul, even though I know he's older, I like him as a prospect. He could be an option there at 54. Wide receiver, Troy Franklin's there, Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, even though he's older, Malachi Corley, Jalen Polk. The running backs are there. I don't think they're a real option at 54, but who knows? I think if Brooks is there, I think there probably would be a discussion. And then D tackles. I know this is a debate you've been hot on for like the last month. Chris Jenkins is there, Michael Hall, Rook from Clemson. Like there's some options there. And Johnny Newton from Illinois, which I don't think anybody thought he was going to fall out of the first round. So there's plenty of talent there. Obviously, we have to wait 21 picks before we get to the Browns tonight. But there's still a lot of talent to be had for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and obviously the first question when you talk about talent there is people like, let's trade up and go and grab someone. So just to look at that, if you were going to trade up about 10 spots, you're probably giving up something like the two day two picks and getting back something like 117. Maybe just in or out of the bottom of day two, top of day three. And that's kind of like the hey. You can jump up 10, but that's it. You might be done for the day. That's the risk. I'm much more inclined to say, hey, you wait and see what's there, and you get two guys. If you're trading up four, five picks, and you're only giving up sort of maybe 200, that's more in line with what's potential. I don't see us going, hey, let's jump up 10 plus.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Maybe Philly, because they got two of like the five picks ahead of us, that there could be a deal there. But yeah, I would rather stay unless they fall in love with somebody. Like we know they like Troy Franklin. If Troy Franklin's there and he's feasible and the cost isn't effective, maybe the Browns hop up a couple spots just to secure him to make sure like Pittsburgh doesn't get him or one of these. I forget who else is all in front of us besides Philly and Pittsburgh, but
Rams.
the Rams, yeah, they could use another receiver even though they got Kupp and Nacua. But yeah, I mean those guys are there. I forgot to even mention Ladd McConkey, who I think some of us are still kind of surprised. I thought he might go late one last night, but he ended up falling out too. And I mocked him to the Browns this morning in a simulator. So if he somehow falls to 54, I'm running up there to get him because I think he's the best of the bunch, even though I do have a love for Troy Franklin.
Just
As far
jump
as,
in there.
oh, yeah, go ahead.
Only eight tackles went, which is a lot. And if you'd have asked me 2 days ago, I'd be like, eight tackles. But then when we started seeing people like Josh Norris mocked 10, who's incredibly accurate as a mock drafter, that had me terrified going into yesterday. Because I think if we're sat there and say Kingsley's gone and Patrick Paul's gone, well, Kieran Amadeji would be the next guy. Naturally, on the consensus board, and then that's risky when people are like, oh, you'll get him at 85. He might not be there at 54, but now we've got there's kind of like if you throw Rosengarden in there as well, there's five guys, Kingsley, Paul, Amadeji, Fisher, and Rosengarden. So I think you're gonna get one at 54. 85 is probably unlikely, if I'm gonna be honest.
Do you have a preference there at offensive tackle out of those guys?
Kingsley or Amadeji is definitely my preference, and then
Yeah.
Fisher after that. But it's one that I think you just, as long as you feel good in one of them, just get it done. And then I win a load of money betting as well, which is just it's a nice bonus where me and Andrew Berry both win.
Absolutely. And then a wide receiver, if they go that route at 54, which I don't feel like they have to, I think they can wait until 85, but I think it would be risky because then you fall into the Jermaine Burtons of the world. And while he's talented, there is some red flags. Like, is there a preference at receiver?
In all honesty, I'm not that worried about picking a wide receiver. And I know if our boy Owen Jones is listening to this, he might be terrified in that. But I'm of the view that I don't mind extending Amari Cooper. If I'm picking a wide receiver at 54, even trading up slightly, if the goals for him that is in his first 3 years of the career is the best he can do is wide receiver three. It's not really optimal use of resources. I would much rather go, let's say, draft a tackle. Hey, I'd happily, if you take Kingsley and Amadeju somehow there at 85, I'd take both. It's one that use them where you need to and you want to replace talent. I want to get Jedrick Wills off the roster. I want to be prepared for Joel Bitonio retirement. I want to get Conklin off the roster. And I don't want to get Amari Cooper off the roster. I'm cool with it. If they draft a guy and Troy Franklin's amazing year one, I'm sat there going, hey, we can move on from Amari Cooper. Let's go spend the 25 million a year an extension might have cost and plow it in somewhere else. But it's one that I'm not too worried. So yeah, I'm cool. Extend Amari Cooper and let's plow the positions in something else.
Yeah, I think if they skip, if they, well, not say skip, if they pass on a wide receiver at 54, I think that increases the odds of a Cooper extension substantially. Outside of receiver and tackle, is there any position prospect that you're like, I'd be cool with them taking him at 54? Like, I know Jatavion Sanders gets brought up a lot. I would rather not. I'd rather go get somebody else at tight end later on in the draft. But is there like any other prospect that catches your eye at 54? Potentially.
Yeah, I think he's an option if you view him as basically he's going to be a slot wide receiver.
Yeah.
And then just running two tight end sets in perpetuity. There's no one I'm really that excited about. If I'm honest, if like Ladd McConkey's gone, Mitchell's gone, if Franklin's gone, I don't really know enough about Coleman, but say he's gone, and then your tackles have gone, then I'm like, trade down, find someone else, and we can drop back even a handful of spots, and I'd love to add a fourth. I think the fourth is probably the round where I'm really excited about quite a lot of the talent there. So I would be up for giving that a go. I'm pretty chilled. There's plenty of talent on the board. Ideally, I just want to tackle, and then everything past that is like it's cool. But yeah, the sixth wide receiver can easily then just be special teams. And they've probably got more value to that, especially year one, than anyone you're going to draft past pick 54. But yeah, I'd be okay with quite a few guys. And if we then start getting into that 85 pick, Jermaine Trotter is a guy that intrigues me. I am open to taking a linebacker once you get about 85. I can see it and I can see some value in there. Then you can just look at what else is there. But hey, double dip at tackle and O-line, that would be the home run where people are mad because naturally people that don't really embed themselves in everything of the league get frustrated because tackles and O-line's just not sexy. But it would do wonders for this team.
Yeah, as far as 85 goes, like I like Jermaine Trotter. If they went Cedric Gray or even Trevon Wallace, who I know Brugler's high on, I think there's a couple other draft guys that are high on him. If they go linebacker in the third round, I'm good with that. Like I mentioned, receiver, not a great option. If they go tight end, I know Ben Sinnott is the hot name. If they went him at 85, would not be disappointed. Running back, I know there's like the Trey Benson discussion. I'd rather not go there. Until tomorrow. But I'm with you on the whole adding a fourth round pick. Like if they move back 5, 10 slots combined, maybe some of the day three picks tomorrow, the late sevens, and try to add a fourth, I think that would be the great move because I'm with you. There's guys in that are projected like in the fourth round and before 156 that I would absolutely love to get, including the double dipping of offensive linemen. Like if they take Zach Zinter tomorrow, if they somehow get a pick and take him and stash him for a year and groom him to be Betonio or Teller's long-term replacement, it's a home run pick. But there's other guys there as well that I like at the guard position that test out well. They fit the guardrails. I think that would be a good fit because they do need to start getting cheaper and adding more talent to that offensive line room because the tackle situation, obviously, even though we have six on the roster, five of them are realistically gone after this year, with the exception of DeJuan Jones. And then the interior, Betonio isn't getting any younger. Teller's pushing 30. They got to start looking for cheaper ways if they want to keep Pence adding more talent on the offense and defense.
No, they're in a nice spot, and that's kind of the key point here. Is it's going to be interesting to see how it falls out, but it's weird because it's quite a long way. If we were chatting about 45, we could get really detailed here and have a really good feel. And Andrew Berry said it himself: when you're 10 picks away, that's what matters. And that, if you look back on sort of all the trade ups, 10 picks is where it's realistic. But yeah, see plenty of movement. I just don't want to see. Let's see a load of defensive players come off the board. That's just start this day. If we can get 15 out of the 21 players defensive, we're sat here rubbing our hands and celebrating.
Yeah, for sure. There was when they showed the board last night, there was still so many corners, and I think there was some couple edge guys, and of course the D tackles. Like I'd like to see a run on them early tonight, and but I'm sure there'll probably be wide receivers and tackles going, and we're gonna be on the edge of our seats for sure.
So where's the way?
Absolutely. And of course, the OBR's covering the draft full length, all 250 something picks. Jack, I know you were part of it last night. I had to take a little shot at you when there was all six of you guys up on the board, up on the screen, but you guys are killing it. Obviously, so much content over at the OBR. Do you got anything dropping during the day Friday that people could go take a look at?
So I've dropped my updated guardrails board. That's out there already, so that went out straight after, and I'll do the same again tonight. So as soon as day two finishes, I'll put an article on the website that just has everyone remaining. And then if you are an OBR subscriber, either go into Insider Central, or there'll be an article comes out about 3 hours before the draft starts, probably when I'll do it. There is a Google Sheet that I'm sharing with subscribers that just has me marking off every time people are picked. So a bit like a live big board of who's remaining. So just an interesting exercise because, hey, I'm doing it for myself, so I thought I may as well share. So yeah, if you're an OBR subscriber, go check it out.
And their YouTube show, well, their YouTube, their Twitch, their show starts at, does it start right at 7 or do you guys start a
Yeah.
little bit before?
Straight on when it all kicks off. I
All
think
right,
if we
sweet.
were picking sort of top three, then I think we'd probably go half an hour early, but we'll kick off when the draft starts.
Yep. So 7 o'clock Eastern on the OBR's YouTube and Twitch channels. Check out their draft coverage. I will be making an appearance on the Barking Browns draft show tonight with Jacob Roach, Casey Kinnaman, and Nick Carnes. I'll be hopping in there at some point for a little bit tonight. So definitely check that out on their YouTube and Twitch channels. In the meantime, you'll check out Jack's work at the OBR. Follow him on Twitter at Jack Duffin. As for me, follow me on Twitter at Jack McCurry08, the Dogland, at the Dogland on all our social media platforms. And we will be back hopefully tonight after the draft. If not, try to do something early tomorrow morning before day three starts, recapping what the Browns did, or well, who knows? Maybe they don't do anything. Maybe Barry trades his picks for future assets tonight. Who knows? The guy's a madman. But as always, guys, thank you for listening and go Browns.
Go Browns.